Find out what the whole world is thinking in The Agenda.
This week on The Agenda, poverty versus climate change. We speak to a man who thinks the world is getting its funding priorities wrong, Bjorn Lomborg. Poverty alleviation and climate change, two of the biggest, if not the two biggest challenges facing the world today. And both require huge amounts of international cooperation and, of course, money to solve. But is the world getting the balance of funding right? I'm joined now by Bjorn Lomborg, president of the think tank, the Copenhagen Consensus Centre, and best-selling author of The Skeptical Environmentalist. Great to have you on the agenda, Bjorn. But let's start off by getting one thing straight about how you feel about climate change. You recognise it's happening, but your gripe is how the world is tackling it, right?
Exactly. So absolutely, global warming is a real problem. But what we also need to recognize is there are many problems in the world. What the scientists is telling us is climate change is a real problem, but it's not, as many people hear it, and it's being presented by many of the activists, if you will, it's not the end of the world. It is a problem, and it's one of the many problems, just like inflation, hunger, poverty, jobs, lack of good education, all these other challenges. And so we need to get our sense of priority right, because if we focus too much on one thing, we end up forgetting all the others.
So you think that the global response should be smarter?
Exactly, because, look, again, we have many problems in the world. Hunger, poverty, jobs, health. There are all these things that people really do care about. And what my organization, together with hundreds of the world's top economists, we work with seven Nobel laureates in economics. What we try to do is to look at where can you spend an extra dollar or yen or whatever your currency is and do the most good for the world. So not just saying, let's focus on the things that get the most attention in the news, but actually focus on the things that we know do the most good for the world.
So you're saying still spend the money, but spend it in a different way, and that will in itself generate the dollars. I want to talk about your recent op-ed piece on this subject, Don't Place Climate Over Poverty. It's appeared in so many publications, from China Daily to the New York Post, the Times of India to Hungary's portfolio. What's the reaction, the feedback been?
I've been very pleased that a lot of people have said, given very positive responses. There's a lot of people out there who feel that we have perhaps placed too much focus on climate and forget about the many other problems in the world. But also, many of these people who are working in many other areas apart from climate are perhaps a little reluctant to take the fight to the very visible climate discussion. And so I think this is a conversation that we need to have. It does not mean that climate is not also important. It doesn't mean we should just ignore climate, but it means we should recognize we need to ask, what is the value that we get for different investments of our dollars or yens in climate and in all these other areas?
But aren't poverty and climate change inextricably linked? I mean, the poorest people in the world are the most affected by climate change. In the UN fears that climate change is going to push 120 million more people into poverty. And that's just by the end of this decade. Shouldn't we be treating these issues together?
Well, we still need to do what's most efficient. And remember, what we know is that poor people everywhere are most vulnerable to everything. They're vulnerable to infectious diseases, economic recession, inflation, bad harvest, any problem that you can come up with, they are the most vulnerable. And so again, if you look, for instance, on hurricanes, which of course has a large part of the conversation in climate, if a hurricane hits, say, Florida, you will get some damage. You will get a few people dead, but mostly Florida will get over it in a couple of weeks or certainly months. Whereas if the same kind of hurricane hits a poor Guatemala, it will devastate their economy. It will kill tens of thousands of people. And that's why we need to remember that everything is more vulnerable when you're poor. So the question again is, what should you do? That particular study that you mentioned that found that climate in its most extreme form could lead to an extra 120 million poor. That's a relevant knowledge. But what they also say is, no matter what we do with climate policy, that will have no impact by 2030. So we can literally do nothing by 2030 with climate policy. However, the same study shows we can make a huge difference with economic policy. If we make bad economic policy, we'll see about 900 million people poor by 2030. If we make smart economic policy, we could see as low as 100 million poor by 2030. So what they're really telling us is, with climate policy, you can make zero impact by 2030 on poor. With smart economic policy, you can reduce the number of poor by 800 million people. Clearly, what we need to say is, let's again do the smart policy. If we actually care about poor people, let's do the effective policies first.
So why then is climate change so dominant, not just in terms of the news agenda, but from politicians and from economists too? Is it this notion that it's going to put us all at risk of being extinct, not just the poorest?
I think this is because you know this very well working in news. If it bleeds, it leads. It's just much more interesting to talk about really scary propositions. This is, of course, why people think it's terribly dangerous to fly, whereas it's not dangerous to drive, whereas we know in the statistics it's the exact opposite way. But you only see airplane crashes. You don't see a lot of car crashes. What you need to recognize is that we're seeing the same effect with climate, that we have an overwhelming number of people telling us, here's one problem with climate. And some of them are real. I mean, this is a real problem, but they're often vastly exaggerated. Whereas we hear very little about the immense problems you have from poverty, from hunger, from the fact that easily curable infectious diseases that could be fixed today are not fixed and kill millions of people. So we hear one story, but we don't hear all the others. And of course, what we're also missing is, how effective are our different solutions? Unfortunately, no matter what we do in climate, it will be very costly, but actually have very little impact even in 100 years. Whereas many of the policies that we could do to deal with poverty, hunger, disease are very cheap, but could do immense good at very, very short time periods of a year or so.
So let's talk about some of those solutions. Because in your latest book, Best Things First, you set out 12 most efficient solutions to global poverty. They're not all new ideas, though, are they?
No, they're not. Because what we try to emphasize is, what are proven solutions with strong representation and support in the academic literature? So this is something that we know works, but we haven't done this for many countries and certainly not for many of the world's poor. What we essentially find is that for very little additional money, we could do some of the best things for humanity. We find for these 12 solutions, I'm sure we'll talk about some of them, but for these 12 solutions would cost an additional $35 billion a year. Now, that's a lot of money. If, you know, I don't have that money, I don't think you have that money. But in the international system, this is a rounding error. $35 billion a year is very, very little money in the international system. However, that money could save 4.2 million lives each and every year and make the poor half of the world $1.1 trillion richer each and every year. It's simply the best single thing that we could do, or the best 12 things that we can do. And that's, of course, by design. We asked all the economists that we've been working with to find the very best documented solutions that could do amazing good at low cost. These are the 12 things we should be doing first.
So talk us through some of them. Talk us through some of the quick fixes, if you like, or how you can help the poor now without being wasteful, without being unrealistic.
I'll give you three examples, if you don't mind. The first one is on tuberculosis. Remember, tuberculosis used to be an incredibly deadly disease in the world. Almost every fourth person that died in the 1800s in Europe and the U.S. died from tuberculosis. But then we found the solution. We basically found antibiotics. And we don't need to send people to sanatoriums anymore. We basically saved most people from dying from tuberculosis in the rich world. Unfortunately, this is still not the case in the poor half of the world. So every year, about 1.5 million people die from tuberculosis. We could almost entirely avoid all of that death if we just invested a little more money. We're talking about $6 billion a year, and then we could save about 1 million people's lives each year. It's about making sure that people take their medication. TB medication is particular because you actually need to take your medication for half a year. And if you've ever had to take like a 2-week medication and you get better, you start forgetting to take your medication. Try to do that for half a year and you will start forgetting it. And that means you actually encourage drug-resistant TB and so on. So we need to get people better at taking them. And then we have about 3 to 4 million people that are undiagnosed for TB. We need to find those. There are a lot of different ways you can do that. You go out in vulnerable populations. You make sure that you have people listening in to, are you coughing a lot? Why don't we go to the hospital and get you checked? That kind of thing. It is fairly cheap, but it still costs money. So for $6 billion a year, we could actually save more than 1 million people's lives each and every year. This is one of the quick wins. We estimate that for every dollar spent, you will do $48 of social benefit. It's just one of the best investments we could do in the world. Let me also just tell you about another thing, which is a very different kind of thing, but similarly has very proven points that it can be incredibly effective. That's education. So everyone agrees that education is incredibly important and valuable. But unfortunately, for a lot of kids, and this is mostly a problem with kids in primary school across the low and low middle income countries, there's almost 500,000 kids in school, but they're not learning very much. One of the problems is that we need to find a better way to get them to learn. It turns out that the best way to do that is to teach them at their right level. So remember, if you're in a classroom, there are kids who are very smart and far ahead of the teacher. There are kids who are struggling and have no idea. There's no way the teacher can help all of them. But if you get 1 hour a day, get these kids in front of a tablet with educational software. We know this is very well and proven. We know that this can actually teach the kids at their own level. The computer will very quickly find out, oh, you're at that level, and start teaching you at your exact level. If you do that for a year, this will cost about $31 per kid per year. But the benefit will be that each of these kids will, on average, learn as much as they normally would have taken 3 years to learn. You've just simply sped up education by a factor of three. This is probably the most effective way to improve education. Again, proven in wide, large-scale randomized controlled trials, we know it works. We've actually been instrumental in helping, for instance, Malawi deliver this across their entire primary school. This is a very cheap way of dramatically improving. It'll cost about $10 billion per year for the world, but the benefit will be that long-term impacts will be so big that it'll feel like each nation will become about 600 billion richer. Sorry, all of the nations will become about 600 billion richer per year.
So cure tuberculosis, invest in education. You said you had three examples.
Yes. So the third one is agriculture. So again, agriculture is obviously incredibly important. Remember, most people in the poor half of the world still work in agriculture. We have had an incredible revolution in much of the world where we managed to get people much better off because we found smart ways to grow much more food on every acre. It was called the Green Revolution. It was back from the 1960s, 70s. And this was what basically lifted most people out of both poverty and hunger. We thought, for instance, India was almost a basket case. Now India is one of the world's leading rice exporters because we could dramatically increase yield. But we did that for rice, wheat, corn, or maize, those very typical but rich world produce. We haven't done this for the world's poorest people who use cassava or sorghum and all these other not nearly as well-known crops, but very important for poor people. We should do the same green revolution. We should basically be investing in green R&D for agriculture. And that is a very cheap way to make agriculture much more productive and hence make a lot more people able to sustain themselves. We'd get people out of hunger. We would make it better for producers because they could produce a lot more. And we would make it better for consumers because they paid less for each kilogram that they would be buying.
But Bjorn, if these low-cost solutions to big world problems like tuberculosis, like poor education and food insecurity, if these low-cost solutions exist, why isn't everyone putting them into practice already?
That's a very good question. And I think the point is we know these things work, but often we don't do them. Why? That's exactly your question. I think that it's very much because much of our conversation in the global arena is about things that make the front page, that get to the top of a news program. And those things are about things that are sexy. This is, you know, the ones where you can say, here are threatened cute animals, or here are a lot of crying babies, or here are groups with great PR, that we focus on interesting, exciting, very dramatic pictures and stories. And in that sense, what you could say is we're sort of the defenders of boring solutions. This is boring to say, oh, you need to be better able to take your TB medication, and you need to be able to find more people with TB. You need to screen large communities. You need to get a tablet into an educational software, or you need to make a higher yielding cassava. That's not terribly interesting. It just happens to be incredibly effective. So I want us to focus less on the very sexy things and focus more on the boring but incredibly effective solutions. And that's going to be hard. That's why you'll probably also struggle with this program, because is this sexy? Probably not as cool as it could have been if I had been talking about the end of the world. But it just happens to be much, much more effective.
Geopolitical tensions, that the rising cost of living, the threats as well as the opportunities that come with new technologies like artificial intelligence, climate change, these are all the big issues that the world is grappling with and trying to cooperate on. So what are the most effective things to do for the world?
Well, as you just pointed out, there are lots of things battling for our attention, but there are only a few proven incredibly effective solutions. So what I'm saying is, whatever else it is that we're doing, we should do those things first. So there are lots of challenges in the world, but some challenges have very effective solutions that for little money can do an incredible amount of good. Many of them have either very expensive solutions that'll do very little, or we just don't know how to fix them. I'm simply making that very simple point. Let's do the smart stuff first, and then let's fix all the others, or at least try to fix all the others.
We're in a big year for elections. So where should the political push be coming from here, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of this push can come from the poor half of the world. Remember, lots of rich world governments and the UN has been pushing for a very long time that we should focus on everything. If you look at the so-called sustainable development goals, which are goals that have been set up for the entire world, every single government across the world have signed up for these goals by 2030. They're essentially a compendium of every good thing you can possibly imagine. So they promise to get rid of poverty, which is great. We don't quite know how to do that, but it's great that they're trying. But they also promise social protection system, which is going to cost at least $1 trillion. We don't have. They promise we're going to fix hunger, which is, again, a wonderful intention, at least, but also that we should have organic apples for everyone, which is, you know, more sort of a luxury item. And they promise everything to fix corruption and war and climate change and every other ill in the world. Again, developing countries need to say, look, it doesn't help us to say we're going to fix everything, because we're clearly not. We're actually failing on all of these promises. Instead, we need to focus on the smart solutions first. We need to focus our very limited resources on the things that will do the most good. Now, again, I recognize that when politicians need to get reelected, they will tend towards focusing more on the sexy issues. You know, that's what wins elections, that get front pages. But at least by the fact that we have put out, here are 12 amazing solutions. These are proven. We know that they work, and we know that they would deliver amazing good. It's a little more likely that more politicians and more citizens are going to demand that.
Do you think maybe we need to rethink the way that global institutions are run? I'm thinking of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the IMF.
Absolutely. A lot of these organizations tend to focus, just like rich world politicians, on things that sound good rather than things that actually do good. And so my goal, again, is to say, this is not how we should do good in the world. What we should be doing is to say what actually works. So there's a lot of focus in many of these organizations on promising everything to everyone, which of course ends up showing no priorities. If you think everything is a priority, nothing really is a priority. But also there's a focus on saying we want to, you know, focus on the cute animals, the crying babies, the groups with great PR. But what we really should be saying is we want the evidence for where good can come from very little money to do amazing good. And again, so what we're trying to push is do more of the smart stuff. Don't just do the stuff that sounds good.
Let's talk about China, because they've made huge strides and when it comes to poverty alleviation. Where else do you see impetus building for the kind of change that you advocate?
Well, so I think China is a great example of saying what does actually matter for our population. It's very clear that if you make sure that you get good opportunities for trading, that you get good energy, that you get plenty of energy, and that you get an opportunity to do great stuff in the world, you can actually lift an enormous number of people out of poverty. And that's probably the single most important thing you can do for humans, because when you're no longer poor, you're also much more likely to be able to be much more resilient to all the other challenges like hunger, like disease, and of course also to climate change. So the point here is China has shown the way and led the way in making sure we get more people out of poverty. And we're seeing that both in India and in Indonesia. And also, you know, in much of Africa, there's more attention to and focus on, we need to make sure that people come out of poverty and that we actually make people rich. Many of the solutions that we're talking about, those 12 solutions that we're talking about, it's about free trade. Remember, free trade is one of those things that we've sort of started forgetting about, but really what has made the world rich is by making sure that we do what we do best and then trade with each other. Free trade is an incredibly important part, but also education so that you learn more and you become more productive. And for instance, tuberculosis, so you stop dying and can actually remain productive. Those are the kinds of things that I think we can see from China. We can also see from many other countries. And what, again, we need to recognize is these problems will mostly be solved not in the rich world, not by the UN or by IMF, but by the world's poor half. And that is especially from the large giants, so China, India, and Africa.
So what stepping stones do you think would make most business sense? I'm thinking you might be zoning in here on innovation.
So first of all, I think, yes, there's a lot of people invested in the current system, but in some sense, we should recognize these are all good people. You know, the people who did these sustainable development goals, the people who sign up to do all good things for the world, are really people who want to do good. That's great. That's wonderful. We should embrace that and simply show there's a better way to do a lot of good. Instead of promising everything, we should be promising the most effective things first. And so that's where I really think we need to talk people into this conversation. Now, again, with the solutions, we know which solutions work. And as you point out, innovation is often one of the very underinvested impacts. That's true for agriculture, as we talked about before. We know that if you spend more resources on agricultural innovation, you're likely to help everyone who works in agriculture. This, of course, is especially important to do for poor country crops like sorghum and cassava and these other things that we talked about. Likewise, if you want to fix climate change, one of the best ways to help fix this is by investing a lot more in green energy R&D. Fundamentally, the problem with climate change right now is that fossil fuels are the cheapest energy source if you want cheap baseload power, that is 24/7 power. But if we could innovate cheap green energy, and one way you could say that was what the U.S. did with fracking. They made gas cheaper than coal, and gas emits a lot less CO2. But also in the long run, if we could make green energy cheaper than fossil fuels, everyone would switch, both China India, and Africa. And that would be the solution to climate. So again, innovation is a large part of this. We underinvest in innovation, and we should be investing a lot more.
Bjorn Lomborg, thank you very much.
Thank you.
But for now, from me, Juliette Mann, and from all the Agenda team here in London, goodbye.